south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's talk about traveling internationally in the age of COVIDiots. I've got a really good boots-on-the-ground story from a British guy and his wife who had been living, actually retired in Costa Rica before the COVIDiot crap, and they decided they had to go back to the UK for some family issues. Wait till you hear what happened as they did their connections at various Latin American and European airports. I don't know how they kept their cool. I'd have went ballistic, but, you know, that doesn't help, especially at airports. But when you hear this story, you're going to think, is it even worth it to travel? Speaking of the terrible intrusiveness of Big Brother, just looking at a government press release of Wednesday, August 4th. It says, the U.S. government is taking first steps towards requiring all travelers entering the USA to be vaccinated for the coronavirus. This, according to the White House press office. Then it says, this requirement would come as a part of the administration's phased approach to easing travel restrictions for citizens and foreigners entering the country. Though no timeline has yet been determined, it says interagency working groups are studying how and when to implement this safe move towards resuming normal travel, saying that eventually all citizens and foreigners entering the U.S., with some limited exceptions, are expected to be vaccinated against COVID-19. In other words, shortly, you must be vaxxed to be able to enter the U.S. Then it says the White House official who spoke on the condition of anonymity said the new rules will require foreigners and U.S. citizens returning from overseas to show proof of vaccination. Isn't that funny? The White House press guy wished to remain anonymous, probably because he doesn't want to get punched in the kisser. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has kept in place travel restrictions that have severely curtailed international trips to the U.S., citing the spread of the Delta variant of the virus. Man, what a bunch of disgusting losers. Will the fake news never end? Why don't we just tell it like it is? Call it the Fauci variant or the Biden variant. The bullshit will never end. As you know, if you've been keeping up with this and checking out the alternative news, the Delta variant is a bunch of BS. Another scheme to get people to take the booster vax. Then it goes on to say, under rules now, non-US residents who have been to China, the European Union, the UK, Ireland, Brazil, South Africa, and India... Well, if you've been in any of those places in the past 14 days, you're prohibited from entering the U.S. And of course, the European Union and the U.K. have their own restrictive entrance policies for various countries. And that ties right into this trying to get out of Costa Rica boots on the ground story we are going to talk about right now. This is from Kent, K-E-N-T, who's a U.K. citizen. He said, first of all, no matter what you've heard in the media about Costa Rica, you don't see hardly any COVID cases at all. Even though the UK says Costa Rica is a red country, therefore bursting at the COVID seams. But I'm telling you, Johnny, the hospitals are not full. Very few people are wearing masks, except the stores and businesses that say you have to have one to enter. However, because we're entering the UK from one of those so-called shithole countries in the red zone, we're forced to quarantine ourselves for 10 days once we get to the UK. As for the COVID shots themselves, the wife and I have not taken them. But even if we had been jabbed, the UK will make us quarantine for 10 days because we're coming from a so-called red zone country, Costa Rica. Though apparently whatever desk jockey bureaucrat designated Costa Rica red zone has never, ever actually visited the place. So the UK says it's a red zone country, but as for Costa Ricans, they haven't got the memo yet. Oh, and by the way, Johnny, I know you don't approve of Costa Rica as a permanent place to have a plan B, but we bought in a long time ago, 12 years ago. And I agree with you that little by little, things are changing for the worst with such an influx of first world people. But it's more than a shade better than living in the UK. And the weather, compared to what we grew up with, is magnificent. Though, I must say, in regards to when we first moved 12 years ago, when prices in Costa Rica were half again compared to the UK, well, now we've lost that advantage. But back to our traveling story. So the UK has designated red countries where anyone arriving from a red country must quarantine at a designated hotel for 10 days. Along with the red, the UK has designated green countries too. And you don't have to quarantine at all, as long as you test negative on a PCR test. problem is, even if you're flying back from a designated green country, so-called safe countries, you have to be tested twice on the second day back and the eighth. Oh, and Johnny, if you read this, for your listeners, there are green, amber, and red countries according to the UK, and they're changing all the time. So if you're coming from a red country like Argentina, Costa Rica, Bolivia, Chile, Colombia, Cuba, Ecuador, India, Uruguay, Turkey, and 50 others. So if you're not a UK citizen or a UK resident, you can't enter the country at all. But if you are a resident or citizen, you must book a quarantine hotel package for 10 days, including two COVID-19 tests. And that whole package for two could easily cost £1,500 or $2,000. And the UK also designates what they call amber countries, an amber list. On that list, we have Aruba, the Bahamas, Austria, Belize, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, India, Hungary, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, even Monaco, and about 50 others. Upon arrival in the UK from an amber country, you must produce a negative COVID test, and you must quarantine at home or in the place you are staying for 10 days. And then you must take a COVID test on or before day 2 and on or after day 8 of your quarantine. However, you don't have to quarantine at all if you've been fully vaccinated in the UK or under the UK vaccine program overseas. And you must have had your final dose of the vaccine at least 14 whole days before the date you arrive in the UK. Though you still need to book and take a test on the second day. How ridiculous is that? You take the vax and then you got to get tested again and again and again. Anyone with a brain must realize the vax doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Now, if you're arriving in the UK from a green country, you don't have to quarantine, but you must take a COVID-19 test on or before the second day. And here's the most disturbing part. The National Health Service has an archive of people who've tested positive for COVID-19. Anytime you test positive, you end up in their file. And even if you arrive from a green country, you may be notified that you must quarantine for 10 days if the National Healthcare's test and trace system informs you that you traveled with someone or in proximity of someone who has tested positive for COVID-19. All right, me, Johnny, just a second here. Are you getting this? This has got to be one of the worst cases of government intrusion in a so-called free country that I've ever seen. By the way, Kent, the emailer, sent me a link to the site that explains all this bullshit with the ever-changing lists of green, red, and amber countries and all the rules and regs you got to follow and all the multiple hoops you have to jump through. Oh, then Kent says, if you're arriving from a green country and you change planes in an amber or red country, or within 10 days of arrival in England, you've been through an amber or red list country, you must follow the amber list or red list rules, not the green list rules from your country of origin. So Kent says the way it works is when you arrive in England, you need to follow the rules for the highest risk country or territory you have been in or passed through in the previous 10 days. That includes transit stops and changes of planes. They're saying these rules apply because new passengers get on and off during transit stops. Passengers coming from red and amber countries, and they'll mix with you and then get on their planes again. So there's that ever-present problem of cross-contamination. Again, me, Johnny, here. Are you getting this? George Orwell was a clairvoyant, huh? Worse yet, the rules are always changing, so you got to check those websites daily if you're doing any traveling. So as you can see in the UK, billions are being made on just these PCR tests, which all you guys listening to this program know. They're so accurate, even pineapples and avocados test positive. It's a bizarro world gone nuts. Anyway, Kent says they went online to one of the reputable ticket brokers and found they could not get a direct flight from Costa Rica to the UK, probably because it's a red country, and that means only UK citizens and residents are allowed in. No foreigners, tourists, or non-residents allowed. So with no direct flights, we booked a two-stop layover. First stop, an hour and a half in Mexico City. Second stop, two-hour layover, Barcelona, Spain. And then on to Heathrow, UK. So Kent says, with the first layover in Mexico City, we had to transit to a different part of the airport and show our papers at the connecting flight check-in. And when we walked up to the counter, the man said our COVID PCR tests weren't valid. And the reason? Because we were transiting to Barcelona, Spain, that had a PCR 48-hour time limit. Some are 72 hours, some are 48. And in Spain, it's 48. Then Ken said, we'll make it. We're only going to be in the transit lounge an hour. But the attendant said, it doesn't matter. You have to have new ones. You can do them right here at the airport. I said, where do we go? And he gave me directions and said, I got to first fill in a form on their website to get an immediate appointment. He said, you just can't show up and walk in. You got to make an appointment. There was another form too, a transit form to fill out online. The guy gave me the websites and I panicked for a minute because the Wi-Fi was down at the airport. I said, wait, how do I fill out the forms when there's no Wi-Fi? He said, you can wait for it to come back. It's spotty, but it will connect, so keep trying. Or you can buy a local SIM card here. They sell them in vending machines. But I told him we didn't speak much Spanish. We didn't know how to do that. And the guy at the desk just rolled his eyes and said, I don't know. Those are your options. All right, me, John here. Now, can you imagine Kent and his wife living in Costa Rica for 12 years and they don't speak Spanish? That's typical. There's just so many gringos there. You don't have to speak Spanish. Just like if you live in my jammy, you never have to learn English. So we walked to the testing place, told the nurse what we needed, and she said, sign up on the web. And we said, look, there's no Wi-Fi. How are we going to do that? She said, I'm sorry. Those are the rules. And that's when the panic really set in. And the clock kept on ticking. Luckily, Kent says, there was a lady behind him in line who was from the UK, and she offered her hotspot with her own phone. She had roaming and an international SIM card. Then Kent said, the panic did not abate, because we only had an hour to get those COVID tests and catch the connecting plane. And there's always that lingering doubt that my wife or I would test positive. Even so, with this simple trip back to the UK, there were so many things that could go wrong and delay us indefinitely. Okay, then we got the test, and as we were filling out the next form, it said, where is your next destination? We put down Barcelona, and the nurse said, now you have to get on this website. She gave us a Spanish website and fill out their transit form. So I used that kind lady's hotspot again, and guess what? That website in Spain was down. It wouldn't connect, and the clock kept ticking. And after about 10 minutes of trying, it finally connected, and we filled out the form. Oh, and I forgot to tell you why they made us take new COVID tests. Obviously, we were able to fly out of Costa Rica to Mexico because we had a valid COVID test. But here's the thing, though in retrospect, absolutely absurd. Since we were flying east across the Atlantic Ocean, we were to regain 10 hours or more, which pushed us over Spain's 48-hour PCR test limit. Of course, that's bad math. It's insane. Real time is linear. Just because you lose 10 or more hours due to the spin of the Earth and the time zone change, that's an artificial, arbitrary, man-made construct. It has nothing to do with the continuous linear march of real time. But try to explain that to those airport idiots. Anyway, we took the tests, they were negative, and we boarded the plane. Unfortunately, we all know what it's like dealing with government bureaucrats who stick to their script even if it's completely illogical. But, you know, government employees, they don't get paid to think. Then Ken says, when we finally ended up in the UK, we had to fill out a government locator form and they actually come to your house and check on you. I don't know where they get the manpower for that. They must have hired tens of thousands of new morons. But they actually visited our house to check on us two different times while we were in that 10-day quarantine. It was absolutely like house arrest. In fact, I asked the lady the first time, why don't you just give me an ankle bracelet? And she laughed, thought it was funny, then straightened up and told me what a serious business this is. Yes, George Orwell would be proud. Because remember, during our quarantine in the UK, we had to take a 2-day and an 8-day PCR test again. Oh, and Johnny, at the airport, you know, every other seat has got tape on it, so you can't sit right next to a person. But when you file out of the airplane, everyone's jammed shoulder to shoulder in the center aisle where everyone has to congregate to exit. No social distancing there. Same thing when you get on a plane, everybody's masked up. Then after an hour or so, masks start slipping down to people's chins. Soon they're farther down, hanging from everyone's neck. It's just ridiculous. So much for rigid airline and airport COVID measures. There's absolutely no logic behind this stuff. Seems like bureaucrats with a little power are making it all up as they go along. The more complicated, the better. You might as well call it the Government Bureaucrat Full Employment Act. All right, me, Johnny here. Allow me to digress for just a few minutes. It reminds me of a story my British buddy, Matty McCafferty, once told me. He has a few apartment houses north of London, but he's also in the British Army Reserve. And one day he told me something that really shocked me. He said, when he was around 18 or 19 years old, doing his boot camp stuff in the UK, a guy from the NHS came around, National Health Services, and he said they were doing a vaccine testing program. And if you'd like to volunteer, they'd pay you £1,000, something like $1,500, to take a cocktail jab of vaccines they were testing. Needless to say, he said, all the low-income guys in his group, you know, guys whose families lived in council houses, that would be government-subsidized housing, you know, welfare. He said practically all the poor boys signed up. He took the jab, got the dough, and was laid up in bed for a week and was sick, at least not near 100%, for the next 3 months. Now, Maddie's about 55 years old right now, and he says, looking back, he said it was probably one of the top five stupidest things he's ever done in his life. And I said, do you think they're still doing that? He said, I don't know, but someday I'll look it up. And I thought, man, what a scary story. They get you when you're young, stupid, macho, and broke. The perfect combination to get sucked into a scheme like that. Seems young males at 18 to 22, it's the peak of their self-perceived invincibility. Now, I haven't been in contact with Maddie for a good long time now. I'm almost afraid to ask how he's doing. Anyway, then Ken says, you know, when we took the flight from Costa Rica to Mexico, we were on a 747 and there were 13 people on the plane. But the plane from Mexico to Barcelona was full. By the way, here's a good question. Are you old enough to remember when flying was fun? Anyway, Kent continues, we're going to be in the UK for about a month. After that, it's back to Costa Rica for us, hopefully forever. We have a nice beachfront condo in Guanacaste. We'll be heading back there in a month or so, and we'll report in on how the return flight situation goes. It seems to me it'll be infinitely easier to fly from a green zone country to a red. We shall see, we shall see. Signed, Kent and the Misses. Well, thanks for that, Kent. Very interesting, and I don't know how you got through all of it without losing your cool, without blowing your stack. I guess it's that old British reserve kicking in. You know, stiff upper lip and all that? You know, I've got a couple of expat gringo buddies who are a little rough around the edges. I don't think they'd have got through that airport situation like you did without busting a few noses. By the way, did you ever notice that this COVIDian thing is the catch-all excuse for dropping the ball? It's what people, businesses, and especially government bureaucrats use as an excuse for everything that goes south or doesn't get done at all. Why is the Uber late? It's COVID, man. Why is the stock market up or down? COVID, man. Why is my Wi-Fi so slow? COVID, man. What happened to the famous Amos cookies? Why aren't they in stock? COVID, man. Why is food and gasoline more expensive? COVID, of course. Why so many UFO sightings? COVID, man. Why is my dog treating me differently? Why does grandma fart so much? Why do so many people believe Gates, Fauci, the WHO, and Big Pharma's lies? COVID. What else? All right, let's talk about something practical now. Something government bureaucrats and a-holes have no say in at all. You longtime listeners know I prefer to live in the Altiplano regions where there's no air conditioning or heating bills at all. Though lots of gringos and expats want to live on or near a beach or in the lowland. That means you'll be wanting air conditioning, or at least, at a minimum, air conditioning in your bedroom so you could sleep without a constant film of sweat on your skin. I know how uncomfortable that can be, judging by the many times I've stayed over at people's houses. People who live on or near the beach and don't have AC. So anyway, for the vast majority of you who'd like to live on or near a beach, you'll need air conditioning. And my choice for the best AC unit, it's not a window air conditioner. No, forget about those. It's a mini split AC unit. That's the kind of air conditioner that comes in two pieces connected by a length of copper tubing and an electrical cable. The part that actually cools your home is a unit that's about as big as a queen size pillow, mounted on a wall about 6 inches below the ceiling. And the other part it's connected to with that tube and wiring, that tube and cable hopefully discreetly hidden in the interior of the wall, is connected to a unit with a fan in it that's about the size of a regular piece of stowed luggage. That's the part sitting outside somewhere, usually on a roof. It's the thing that makes all the noise. The unit in your room makes almost no noise at all. And those new so-called split AC units are very, very energy efficient. In fact, if you buy one of these today, it's about twice as efficient as the same ones produced about 5 years ago. Now, you know, when you buy appliances, even kitchen appliances, there's a little yellow energy tag on each one that says how much energy it uses per year, which for air conditioning units is not very accurate because who knows what you're going to set it at, what temperature, and if you're going to run it day, night, or part of the time. What you really want to look for is what's called the SEER number, SEER. SEER rating. Now, 5 years ago or so, a very high SEER number, the higher the better, was around 10. And with today's mini split ACs, lots of them have a SEER number of 20 or more. So why are we mentioning this besides the fact that you might have AC? Well, I get lots of emails on the subject. The problem is electricity is very expensive in Latin America. In fact, it's one of the few things besides gasoline that's more expensive than up in the States. That's the reason why 80 to 90% of all Latin Americans living on the coast or in the lowlands don't have air conditioning. It's just too expensive to run it, especially if you're making minimum wage, $300 a month or so. So here's what every gringo and expat should be interested in. If you have one of these split units in your bedroom, let's say it's rated at 9,000 BTU, that's plenty for a bedroom. By the way, that's considered a rather small mini split unit because they go all the way up to 30 or even 40,000 BTU. Anyway, if you have a 9,000 BTU unit and you have it on day and night, meaning you're always going to keep that room at, let's say, 74 degrees, which is plenty cool even in a tropical climate, sometimes actually too cool, because you see, it's less about the temperature than the humidity. If you've got the AC going at 74 or even 77 or 78, when you open the door and walk into that room coming from the hot, humid air, it can actually feel too cold. So believe me, no matter what you're used to putting your AC at up in the States, you're definitely not going to want to drop the temperature lower than, I'd say, 72 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's way too low for me. When I'm on or near the coast, I set the air conditioner at 77 or 78. And if you think that's not cool enough, well, you have to come down here and get boots on the ground and see for yourself. Anyway, if you've got a newer mini split unit, bedroom size, 9,000 BTU, it'll use on average about 250 watts an hour. Of course, sometimes for a few minutes, it'll use double or triple that, and sometimes it'll be idling or dormant. You know, those things are always monitoring your temperature and cycling on and off when needed or not. 250 watts is 0.25 kilowatts. That works out to around 180 kilowatt hours used per month. And the average cost of electricity here in Latin America is around 20 cents a kilowatt hour. That means if you run that little 9,000 BTU AC unit 24/7 in your bedroom, the electricity will cost you around 36 bucks a month. However, if you're like most gringos and expats and you're only going to use it at night when you sleep, or once in a while during the day when you just can't take the heat anymore, you're looking at 8 hours a day instead of 24, which works out to 12 bucks a month. Sounds pretty reasonable, right? Now remember, just 5 years ago when those SEER numbers were hovering around 10, you'd be paying twice as much. Even so, it sounds fairly reasonable, right? That is, if you're only putting AC in the bedroom. If you do like most gringos and expats, you'll put a much bigger unit in your living room or dining room, wherever, and probably one in each other bedroom or guest room too. So you can see how quickly the electric bill can add up. Suppose you've got three bedrooms with three ACs going. Well, you get the idea. Now, if you've got a big unit, like a 22,000 BTU unit that lots of people would have to cover living room, dining room, and kitchen all at once, well, that's going to use more than twice as much electricity as a 9,000 BTU unit. Though admittedly, if you're living on the coast or have a beach house, you're more than likely to have the windows, patio doors, etc. open during the day to accommodate breezes. Most people, because lights attract bugs, will close their windows and doors at night. Then you'll probably want to switch on that AC. So then what do those units cost? Well, an 8 or 9,000 BTU unit will probably cost around 500 bucks and maybe 50 bucks to install. And a big 22,000 BTU unit? Well, it's more than twice as powerful as a bedroom unit, but it's only slightly larger. And the condenser fan portion is somewhere outside, generally against the house, somewhat out of sight, in the backyard or in a hidden alcove on the roof. So you're looking at $500 for a small 8 or 9,000 BTU unit, and for a bigger one to cover two or three rooms, 22,000 BTUs, around $700 or $800. By the way, having one or two of those mini split AC units is a great incentive for you to get some solar panels, because then, even if you don't have a big lithium battery backup to run them at night, all you really need is maybe 400 or 500 watt panels, and that'll take care of two AC split units during the daytime, during the hottest part of the day too. By the way, with my solar panels, I've noticed they start putting out energy around 7 in the morning till at least 6 at night. So if you've got just five high-powered solar panels, that's the minimum. You really should get more. They're cheap, 150 to 200 bucks a piece, you know. Then you'll be able to run your AC units for free during the day. But you knew that already, right? Or did you? You should be able to put a system like that together for around $3,000. That includes five powerful panels, the racking, and the inverter that changes the DC current from the panels to AC for your house. All right, now let's talk a little bit about Latin American and gringo culture clashes. Some differences I've noticed over the years between gringos and expats and Latinos. I'm talking about the local Latinos, the ones that aren't traveling back and forth to the States, aren't the high-income gringo wannabes that just have to make that trek to Disney World and shop once a year in the capital of Latin America, Miami. Nope, I'm talking about your everyday middle class, lower middle class, and even upper middle class Latinos who haven't been gringoized, that you will run into on a daily basis or even hang with if you're living down here as a long-term expat. Now, we're speaking in generalizations, of course, but they're based in fact. Number one, Latinos generally do not interrupt conversations and break in while you're talking. I'm not saying they're great listeners, but they know better than to interrupt people. When there are conversations going, they wait for their turn to speak. Number two, I've noticed they take responsibility for things. They don't put the blame on others, other family members, the government, COVID, you know what I mean. For example, when they don't show up on time, and they rarely do, they'll say, "I'm sorry, it's my fault." They might throw in that the traffic was bad, but they'll take the blame. Oh, and when you're out to eat with them, for example, if everyone's sharing pizzas, they'll never dive in and make pigs out of themselves. And as much as they want to, they won't snag that last piece. I think it's because they don't make much money, so food is a big percentage of the family budget. And they're very good at sharing. Latinos are very good at sharing stuff. Number four, they treat waiters, waitresses, and service people kindly. Again, lots of wealthy and upper middle class gringo wannabe Latinos are terrible in that respect. But I'm talking about middle class and even most upper middle class Latinos and poor Latinos. They treat the help with respect. Though lots of times not their own help, their own maids and maintenance guys. I'm saying they respect people in the service industry outside of their own homes. And I can't figure out why such a difference. They're nice, friendly, and obliging to waiters and service people, but their cleaning lady, they often talk down to and treat like crap. Or I should say, it's usually the woman of the house that I see mistreating the cleaning lady. I haven't really noticed men doing that to the cleaning ladies, but I've seen ladies do that to their help. And that's not just with wealthy Latinos and Latina bosses. I've seen middle-class Latinas berate their cleaning ladies too, right in front of company. Number five, Latinos are much more polite than gringos and expats. They're simply much less confrontational. They don't want an incident. They want everyone to get along. And if there's a disagreement, they almost never get into shouting matches or take it to extremes. Of course, when it comes to inter-family squabbles, that's a different thing. They can take it and dish it out like nobody's business. But when dealing with friends, neighbors, and strangers, they're awful polite. Number six, I'd have to say from my own experience, as a rule, Latinos are crappy house guests. They almost never leave things as they found them, and your bathroom's bound to be a mess if they stay over in your guest room. And that guest room toilet, don't get me started. You remember in a previous show I said many Latinos, even upper middle class Latinos, don't flush. It's because everyone who's on a municipal water supply and doesn't have a cistern has a shortage of water. It's only on 8 or 10 or 15 hours a day. And you know that right off when you flush and nothing happens. I know, pretty disgusting, but there are some habits Latinos just can't shake even when they're at your house. Number eight, during a long car ride or road trip, you can expect they'll mess up your back seat with soda cans and food wrappers. They're just not into picking up after themselves. Especially middle class and upper middle class Latinos who have maids and cleaning ladies. They're just used to having the help pick up after them. Number seven, they're much more polite than we are. They're extremely into the please and thank you, and even when they're leaving and walking out the door, and you say, see you next time or next week, whatever, they almost always say, si Dios permite, or gracias a Dios, meaning God willing. In fact, the literal translation of adios is go with God. And on that note, we'll conclude this show with an insincere adios.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.